Hey gang, welcome to Tales from the Can. We pre-recorded this episode a couple weeks ago, maybe months, I don't know, some time ago, in order to have something in case life got in the way of our recording schedule, so we wouldn't miss a week. So if we reference something that's a little bit outdated, you'll need to forgive us. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way. The podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun. Gotta give him the credit, he's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
Tonight we're going to talk about the 2007 film Time Crimes, written, directed, and featuring Nacho Vigalondo, director of Colossal. And then also a segment of the VHS Viral called Parallel Monsters. I think I mentioned before, VHS Viral is not a good movie. None of the segments are good. Not the Benson Moore, not this guy's. Benson Moorhead, Moorhead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's too bad. But I will say Time Crimes it's in the genre of one of my favorite types of movies.
The time travel,
time loopy movies.
Okay,
I love them.
Had you seen this one before?
Never.
Oh, excellent.
I don't think I've seen any Nacho Vigalondo movie.
I have Colossal, but I've never seen it yet. What did you think?
It's got Anne Hathaway in it.
It does.
Yeah. See, I don't want to watch it because it has Anne Hathaway in it, but I bet she's really good.
I bet she is good. Also, she's got a good record on her show.
Yeah, she does. What did I think about this movie?
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think I did.
Excellent.
I only watched it once. This is the kind of movie that is just begging for a rewatch, but I'm worried. I'm worried a rewatch might reveal some things I don't want it to. But I enjoyed it. It's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Not to sound like the absent brother Jay, but there wasn't really anything in this movie that was super surprising, but I thought it was well executed. And I love a timey-wimey movie.
Well, I love this movie. I mean, love is a strong word. I think this movie, especially since it's so low budget, it's great. There's no special effects to speak of. There's very small cast, four people total. There's very narrow range. It's basically like maybe a quarter mile radius, and it's got the weird thing is I noticed this for the first time, except for the end credits, it has no music in the soundtrack.
Yes.
It's got weird sounds in the beginning, but it's got no music to it. Okay, there's a song that gets played in and off of the radio or whatever, but that and a Blondie song at the end. But yeah, it's, I think it's doing a thing. And I think that the acting level is maybe summer stock theater quality acting level. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily, Dean, I don't know anything about these guys.
The acting is fine. It's not great, but it is forgivable for this kind of movie.
Sure.
It's not polished. It's not, for a time travel movie, it's not even terribly high concept.
No. And it's
They don't try to explain the tech
at all.
which I love. Yep. Thank you.
Me too.
Thank you. Don't waste time on that. Yeah. And, the main character, Hector, he makes some dubious decisions at best throughout the movie that don't really hold up to any kind of scrutiny. But the movie's not slow.
No?
It seems like it, but it takes its time, but it is always moving.
Oh, yeah.
Relentlessly forward, even when it's looping back on itself.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And again, for the no special effects, it actually, like, what could be dumb, like the whole bandages on his face thing.
That was dumb.
Kind of dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then I don't quite understand this, like, fake goggles. Like, I don't get that. But, oh well. But otherwise, like, did you like Hector as a character?
No.
No?
No.
The first time I was like, oh, Hector, you know, you got problems. But no, it turns out, Hector, he makes some, you shouldn't go off in search of the naked lady in the forest. Although I guess at a certain point, I don't know. I mean, he was concerned about her, I suppose. But wandering off into private property is always dangerous. I don't know how it is dealt with in Spain or wherever this was supposed to be.
I mean, Hector was kind of a jerk from the beginning.
Well, a little bit.
He was like, yeah, good job at the table. It's not going to fit.
Well, yeah. I just think he's like,
she's like, let's go out. He's like, I don't want to drive.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, he wanted a nap. He wanted a nap. And then when he found there was a pair of boobs in the woods, he wanted to look through his binoculars.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like the fact that they didn't really set up too much. I mean, I thought it was a weird choice, but sort of fun that in the opening scene, you kind of pan across the stuff that turns out to be like strewn across a driveway. Mm-hmm. And it's because the hatch on his car came open and he ended up dumping his groceries on the driveway or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, he's just sort of like a bumbling guy, you know, he's just kind of doing his thing. And then he gets like stuck in this weird, he just gets like drawn into this weird thing. Time loop thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the funny part of this movie is he ends up having to do some really stupid shit because he'd already done it.
Exactly.
Like the goggles thing, uh-huh. the stabbing himself in the arm thing.
Yes. Like peeping through the window.
Yeah. None of it made any sense.
No.
Except that it had already happened, so he had to do it.
Exactly. Which, again, I think this movie, if you look at it, I think it satisfies, like, it doesn't leave any strands unwoven back in on itself. Like, turns out there is only one Hector at the end of in the beginning of this movie, there's only one mm-hmm. Hector. At the end of this movie, there's only one Hector.
Yeah.
Yeah. And turns out, at some point, there were three Hectors, but still.
Briefly.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing because the time travel is such a small, like, time difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, although it's funny, because watching it this time, when the scientist, who's played by the director, Nacho, when he explains that, like, oh, so you only went back a little bit. And then he immediately says, oh, yeah, so you went back an hour and a half. Like, how would he even know that? Like, why? It seemed like, yeah, anyway. I didn't want to think too much about it, but
did this movie make you think of Primer?
Yeah, and it was funny because I had not realized that Primer was actually 4 years before this movie or 3 years before this movie. So Primer was so much more complicated and maybe more interesting in the time travel time loop of it because of it. But I don't know. I think I like the fact that this was very simple. Keep it simple. Keep it moving.
Yeah. I think this movie and probably even Tenet owes a bit of a debt to Primer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Primer, they did a really good job. It'd be interesting to revisit that. It was just me and Jason for that one, right? And he didn't like it.
He did not. And then I defended it on a later podcast.
Yeah.
When we were supposed to be talking about another movie.
Perfect. See, started strong because I think Primer was maybe episode like within the first 10.
Yeah. That's how we used to do it. You guys would talk and then I'd have like a reaction.
It's true because we were recording two a days too for quite a while.
You were.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So,
not me or Jason.
So let's dive into the plot. Shall we?
I think we better.
Okay. It's pretty short, but it'll do. In the Spanish countryside, a middle-aged man named Hector, played by Cara Elajade, and his wife, Clara, played by Candela Fernandez, live in a home that they are renovating. Hector scans the forest behind their house with binoculars and sees a young woman, played by Barbara Gonaga, take off her shirt, exposing her breasts. By the way, just take a little tangent here to breasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having watched a lot of 80s horror movies and revisiting them and hearing podcasts about them, which makes me want to revisit them again. And again, maybe it's just part of the 70s and 80s exploitation time or whatever. I mean, maybe before and after, I'm sure. But you don't see as many breasts lately as you used to. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just interesting.
I feel like Malcolm Gladwell should do an analysis on the prevalence of gratuitous nudity in B movies versus the prevalent nature of free and accessible pornography.
That may be it. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. For sure. Yeah. Also, at a certain point, at this point in time, you know, you have to pay your people more if they're going to do nudity. And if you're going for strictly shock value, that's where you throw in a wang, because full frontal male nudity is shocking. Ask Seth Rogen.
Why Seth Rogen?
Isn't he... Well, I know John C. Reilly Talk Hard?
Legend of Dewey
Cox. Walk Hard, yes. There's a Talk scene...
Let's pump up the volume.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, yes, you're right. No, in Walk Hard, there's a scene where there's just a guy there. Just from like the belly button down, naked, with his penis in John C. Reilly's face as he has on the phone with his wife, I think. Just for shock value. Anyway, I don't know. Okay, musing about nudity, but I think you're right.
See also episode one of White Lotus.
Okay. What is White Lotus about?
Horribly privileged people acting horribly at a Hawaiian resort.
Is it? Do they get their comeuppance in a satisfying way?
Some.
Is it like a Dallas Falcon Crest dynasty sort of thing? Like fantasy wish fulfillment?
No. It's somewhere between... I guess maybe like Falcon Crest with a dash of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay. All right.
Sorry. That's it's very funny, but it's also very cringy.
Okay. I don't know if I'm into cringy at the moment. By the way, I am preparing. I'm halfway through, actually. Preparing to talk about Rubicon.
Very nice.
And I am finding that it is kind of a heavy watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not... I mean, I was happy that was episode 4 that I got to hear the Thai speech.
I've only rewatched episode 1 so far.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. No, it's good, but it's a lot more depressing than I remembered it being.
it's borderline nihilistic, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Natasha Richardson. Richardson? Who is it? Wait, Natasha Richardson was Liam Neeson's wife, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Who is the lady that plays
the neighbor?
No, the senator's wife.
I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah. Yeah, I forgot that whole storyline.
If you're watching shows on AMC Plus, you should also watch Gangs of London.
Yeah. I probably should. But we'll see.
At least watch the first episode.
Okay. am I going to be depressed at the end of it and not be able to watch two episodes? Because I find that I can watch maybe a maximum of two of Rubicon if I want to go to sleep, because otherwise it'll be like mopey.
Well, I mean, do you know this part? Gangs of London is done by the dude who did the Raid movies?
Nope. I know nothing about Gangs of London.
Okay. It's by the dude who did the Raid movies.
Okay, cool. So Jason and I will be talking about it at some point.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I could feel how proud you were when you typed out "no can do" in the text to me.
About changing the date today?
Yes.
Yeah.
You wrote "no can do." Jay and I are doing Superman 2 that night.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the part that made me proud.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not, yeah. Anyway. But then I realized after, because I got no response, thank you, that.
I actually didn't see it until much later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because I sent it and then I was like, huh. All right. Freeze me out then. Yes, it's fine to change the date. But then I had remembered that I had talked to Jason trying to kind of convince him, because of course he liked Primer so much, to watch Time Crimes. And then I'm like, oh crap, if I change the date on that, and I didn't invite him, and he thinks he can jump in on Friday, and it's like, rah, rah, rah. And so you don't know this part of it, but Jason and I last week talked about Midnight Sky, I think, the George Clooney.
Okay.
Yeah. So we talked about the movie. Mm-hmm. We had thoughts. Kind of negative thoughts. And then after, Jason borrowed the audiobook from the library and listened to it in its entirety the next day. So we jumped back on and we dissected the book too, because we had a fundamental question. And the question is, whose fault was that movie? Was it director Clooney's fault, or was it the author of the novel's fault? Because there's some definite choices that were made that we had problems with.
And where'd you land?
Clooney.
He does not have a great track record as a director.
Well, yeah, just to spoil a little bit of it, it's a beautiful movie. I mean, it's beautiful. It's well acted. They just made some plot choices to kind of zhuzh it up a little bit, because the book doesn't quite go as far as Clooney did. Clooney billed the movie as The Revenant meets Gravity, because there's something going on Earth and something going on a spaceship at the same time. So you've got peril for both things. Well, the peril on the spaceship is fine, whatever. Not surprising, but fine and beautiful. The peril on Earth is way over the top. Like, he would not have survived the peril that happens. So then a really interesting, and by that I mean crappy, choice as for the ending of the film. I'll take this all out of this episode, because you'll hear our whole reaction to it. But yeah, it was fascinating. So anyway. Okay, sorry. Back to Time Crimes. So again, Hector, they're sitting in their yard, and they've got like sort of forest around their yard. And he pulls out some binoculars, and he's just kind of looking in the woods as if that's just what you do. I mean, I don't know. You live in the woods some days of the week.
Yeah, I never pull out my binoculars and look into the woods.
Exactly.
Unless there's a reason, like my dog's going nuts or something.
Yeah. Now, had you spied a pair of breasts in the woods, maybe you would be looking a little bit, you know, occasionally. Like, you know, I get it. You just want to check the perimeter occasionally. So that's what he does. When his wife decides to go shopping or something, he's like, oh, I'll just hang out here. And he's being sort of very cool, low-key about, yeah, I'll be fine. Nothing to see here. I'm sitting in my chair. The binoculars, eh. But as soon as she leaves, he's like, okay, now back to the binoculars. See the lady take off her shirt.
Yeah, I mean, I think if somebody is going topless in the woods, you know, staring at them is fair game. Maybe trying to track them down through the woods without an invitation is not okay.
Yeah, less than fair game. Exactly. Yeah,
that's pretty creepy.
It's a party foul.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. But I kind of liked Hector because, again, he's sort of a schlubby guy. And, you know, he's just kind of, where the day takes him. So he goes and he investigates. And basically he, like, walks down the road and up like a hill into the woods and sees the woman on the ground naked and unconscious. And some of his acting in this is great. I like the throwing a stick at her thing. However, there are some sort of like melodramatic soap opera kind of things, like his reaction, and then he like walks backward and bumps into stuff. That's, I think, a little over the top, maybe, or not quite subtle enough. Anyway, whatever. It's almost like it should be punctuated with dun dun dun. But
well, this is how bad the acting in the movie was. When the woman is lying there naked and unmoving, it zeroes in on her and she is clearly breathing.
Yeah.
Like her chest is moving up and down.
Yes.
I did not know if she was supposed to be dead or not.
Well, there's that, yes.
Like I had no confidence that just because we could see her breathing meant she was not dead.
Okay, I'll grant you that. But as he approaches to get a closer look, and who knows, maybe a feel. I mean, this could have gone a creepy turn for Hector. Had he not been stabbed in the arm with some scissors by a man with bandages on his face and a weird jacket on, or a trench coat. Hector, at this point, has been stabbed in the arm by some weirdo guy, and he runs off. And he ends up breaking into this mysterious building nearby. Now, he is not a cat burglar, sneak thief kind of guy. He just picks up a big-ass rock and throws it through a big plate glass window. Now, granted, somebody has just stabbed him, so I kind of get that. But, yeah. So, he goes into this sort of office, like a modern-type office building. Not building, but, like, turns out it's, like, an office space next to some kind of lab. A silo that has lab equipment in it.
Right.
I think, like, Silicon Valley, like, tech bros kind of thing. That's the vibe I got.
That sounds right.
Yeah. So, then he finds a walkie-talkie and ends up talking to a guy who turns out to be a scientist. And Hector warns him of the bandage man and guides him to his location, promising safety. So the scientist convinces Hector to hide from the bandage man, who's just outside, in a large mechanical device full of milky liquid.
Is he a scientist?
Well, that's the thing. Probably. I mean, he's a guy who works at the lab, but is about maybe to be fired or is... not doesn't have access to the actual lab stuff.
Yeah, he's not supposed to be.
Oh no, he's on the weekend. Yeah, it's just like a Saturday or something. And he's not supposed to be there.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's in they talked about it at some point or maybe it was just in something I read. But it was like, yeah, maybe he wasn't. He was going to be like losing his job on the project or something, or his part of the project was over. He just wanted to try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, so Hector then hides from the bandaged guy, who is right outside the silo, by getting into this, like, basically a pool full of milky white liquid, and then having, a big old trash can lid shoved on top of him.
Made no sense.
No.
There's no way anybody would get in there.
No.
Be like, yeah, I'll get in, you get in too, and then we'll lock ourselves in here.
Exactly.
No way.
Yeah. Well,
made no sense.
Let's just say it was an actual hot tub. Not a hot tub time machine. A hot tub. I would not get into a strange hot tub with a stranger to hide from any other third guy. Because again, we've seen horror movies before. We can't trust Nacho. Turns out he shouldn't have trusted Nacho because Nacho just locks him in. And then the thing opens and he climbs out. Spits out a bunch of liquid, milky white liquid from him, but his clothes are dry.
Do you think that was a direct reference to Alien?
I don't know. I didn't understand it. Didn't really think too hard about it. It turns out he has gone back in time And the scientist refers to him as a Hector 2. And the scientist is surprised to see him because, again, this is the first time the scientist has seen this guy because he doesn't know what's going on. So, when the scientist figures out that, oh, wait, hold on, maybe you went back in time, so don't do anything. We gotta wait till you come back and get in the machine again so that closes the loop. Because ultimately... Don't fuck with this shit.
Yeah. And we already know Hector's not going to do that because Hector's kind of douchey.
A little bit, yeah. Well, he's single-minded. Plus, Hector has seen himself. Like, he is, through the binoculars, he has seen himself, and he recognizes it as things that has happened that we've already seen, like, at his house.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is where it's like, oh, okay, hold on. Then Hector decides to drive off in a car that's there. By the way, I didn't notice this the first time, but I read in the trivia and then it intrigued me, so I was watching for this time. Did you catch the shirt the girl was wearing?
No. I didn't notice anything special about it.
Well, it's two cats. Upside, like one is upside down, the other, it's like sort of a... their tails are touching, I think, or they're... It's two cats, supposed to be Schrodinger cat. One is red, one is blue. And the middle has this, like, little, like, almost like a polygon kind of shape in the middle of it, where the two tails and the two ends of the cat meet. And, sort of. Anyway, I'll put it, it'll be actually the picture for the episode.
Okay.
But that little, like a piece of bacon kind of shape, ends up being also the logo that's on the keys and is like the logo for this business. So it's kind of unclear how she is related to the whole thing.
I did not notice that.
So there was some attention paid to that kind of detail. So he drives down in the car, and he passes the girl on the bicycle. And he stops in the middle of the road. He's like, hey, that's the girl with the shirt and the boobs. And then he gets plowed into by this red van that knocks him off the side of the road and down like this little embankment where the car hits a tree and he smashes his head. So he's now bleeding from his head.
Mm-hmm.
This is Hector 2, of course. And so he takes the bandage from
You already knew that the bandage dude was Hector the first time you saw him, right?
Exactly. The movie's called Time Crime. So yeah, you figure out that that's got to be him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like him. Yeah. Like, you can see his eyes.
Yeah. So he takes off his bandage, and as he takes off the bandage, like, the blood, like, evaporates because it hasn't happened before. So I don't understand that part of it, whatever. But then he puts the bandage on his forehead that is bleeding. He's got a pretty big gash on his forehead. And that turns pink, and so now we realize, and then he grabs this weird, there's some sort of, like, trash container on the side of the road that was knocked over during this whole thing, and there's kind of some kind of trench coat that's in there, so he puts on this weird trench coat, and he's got now the bandaged face with the pink. So now we know, okay, so this is the guy who stabbed Hector is Hector 2. And Hector 2 with the bandage on has to, now he realizes, okay, crap, this is this event, I have to make this happened the same way. So that's where he, the girl, by the way, the bicyclist, comes back to help him because she's sort of a nice person. And she's going to call an ambulance and stuff. And instead, he sort of, in a really clumsy way, sort of tricks her into doing the things that he has seen with the binoculars before. In a really, like, creepy kind of way, because he ends up having to tell her, like, okay, you need to take off your shirt. Come with me into the woods and take off your shirt. And then he threatens her with her scissors, and that's where he gets the scissors, and it's all a bit complicated there. She is legitimately scared of him because he's a crazy person, bleeding from the head with bandages on his head. So she ends up running away from him, and that's when...
And this is actually the nicest he'll be to her for the rest of the movie, right?
Well, as it turns out, yeah. Yeah, like, okay, I see where you're questioning Hector's ethics comes into with the way the movie ends. I get it now. But yeah, So Hector catches her, like catches up to her, but they end up falling down again, another steep part of the woods, and she is knocked unconscious. So he has to drag her up the hill, and that's where he places her in the woods with her, like, naked, where he had encountered her the first time. And he has to hide and wait for Hector 1 to show up so he can stab Hector 1. Okay?
Yep.
That's all good.
Well, so he stabs him, and then Hector 1 runs through the woods.
Yes.
And I actually did like quite a bit the scene where he's doing the goggles thing.
Yes.
But he doesn't exactly know what the right time is, so he has to do it 2 or 3 times.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and in different places.
Yeah, before he can get it to where it was that he saw himself the first time.
Yeah,
that
was pretty funny. Yeah, because he had to do it in scaring Hector 1 to go up further and find the whole building. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so he's interested. And during this period of time, though, once he's done with that, he's like, okay, cool. And then he goes back, and the girl is now is gone. She's disappeared.
Yep.
So he has to go try to find her. Well, he hears a scream at his house, which is across the way. So Hector goes home. He hears the scream, ends up chasing a woman through his house and onto the roof, where when he attempts to grab her, she slips and falls to her death. And he realizes that the person he's been chasing is his wife. He's like, oh my God, I have killed my wife. Because, you know, it says, oh crap, it's her coat, it's her hair, it's her car that's in the parking space or whatever. Oh shit, he thought he was chasing the girl with the boobs, but no, it's his wife. So now he's like, okay.
But his dead wife looked like a really bad waxy mannequin, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And you don't get to linger on that shot. She's just kind of, you know. So.
Yeah.
Hector, and then at this point, he's like, oh, crap, this has really gone poorly, so now I got to fix this. So now he's got to go further back in time and create Hector 3, who can prevent his wife Clara from dying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this is where he ends up having a whole conversation with Nacho about how you got to do this. And Nacho tries to say, no, they can't do it. Don't have the pieces, whatever. It's not available. You can't do it. Won't do it. And then I think his argument was, you already did it. This has all already happened. You have to do this. You have no choice. So they end up sending Hector 2 back 30 or 40 seconds before Hector 1 got sent back and became Hector 2.
Yeah, so at this point, he can really just dial in the time travel?
Right? Apparently, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't know exactly how this works, but oh well. And I guess maybe it was recycling day, because I guess all that white liquid came from those big blue like plastic containers that get knocked over. They are empty, for sure. So mm-hmm. They're just waiting for, I guess, to be refilled by the time juice. Don't want to know much about that. Anyway.
Time juice.
Well, this is where I guess it does have kind of a dark ending if you look at it a little bit. Because now Hector has to go and save his wife. So Hector 3, let's see, tells the scientist, you have to stop Hector 2 however you can. And he encounters the woman again. Start startling her into screaming, but she doesn't recognize him as her assailant. And Hector 2 has heard her scream, so Hector 3 and the woman flee into Hector's house. They become separated. Hector 3 finds Clara, the wife, and he realizes, oh crap, okay, here's what I can do. So he hides his wife in like a shed underneath the porch or whatever, and he goes up and finds the woman. And convinces her he's going to save her. Here, wear my wife's coat, and I'm going to cut off your hair so you have short hair so you can match the memory of the person that I saw that fell off my roof and died.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and then he goes down. When the chase starts, he knows it's in motion to have the finale. He then goes, and he and his wife, his wife has no fucking idea what's going on, except that Hector at this point is pretty fucked up.
Yeah, his face.
Yeah, his face is all messed up.
Yeah.
And he and his wife ends up sitting in lawn chairs, I guess, waiting for the police to come. And when the police get there, they are going to find a dead girl and Hector and his wife. Because Hector, too, will have already gone back and gotten in the time machine one more time.
Correct.
Okay, so that closes the loop. And now we only have one Hector here. So, yeah. I like the closed loop. I'm curious to see what was supposed to happen when the police show up. Because they still got a dead girl there.
Yeah, a dead girl. They were attacked by some assailant, right?
Yeah, I suppose. Although, I don't know, does the dead girl, does she have like his skin under her nail? Does she ever fight him or anything? She runs from him.
Yeah, yeah. That's the problem with this closed loop is if there's any DNA evidence, he's cooked.
Well, yeah, it turns out, yeah, he's all parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's So, yeah, and then the movie ends. I mean, it's like, again, loop is closed.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, Nacho's getting fired. And actually, Hector tells him at some point, yeah, we can't undo what has happened. Because it turns out, of course, the red truck that smashed into the car to get Hector 2's face all bloody was Hector 3. So it's all, it all ties up. Which, by the way, I like that. I like the third thing. Because I wasn't necessarily the first time expecting the third go around.
Yeah, that was a nice loop to throw in there as a further wrinkle.
Yeah,
because the first loop was pretty telegraphed, and even though it was fun to watch him, when he started on the third loop, that's when the movie got pretty juicy.
Yeah, well, and because also. I mean, Hector, at first, he's kind of a goof who gets himself way over his head.
By the end of the movie, he's the Joker.
Well, a little bit. At the end of the movie, he's like, yeah, I can't fix this. All I can do is make it as good as possible. I can save my wife. I don't even know how I'm going to end up this whole thing. And he is so, like, physically destroyed. And it's like he's just mentally kind of done. And you think, like, Nacho is like, what the fuck is going to happen to me? It's like, I can't cover this up. like, and that's where Hector tells him, yeah, you know, people are going to find out about this. Like, you're not, your bosses aren't going to be none the wiser as Nacho has pleaded. It's like, if you just don't touch anything, everything will be fine. Nope. Sorry, dude. Not going to be fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, Fade to Black. And that's the movie. Time Crimes 2007.
Very, very tidy.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I liked it.
It was just about 90 minutes, right?
Yep. Perfect time. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yep. And it ended on a note. It wasn't an up note, but it ended on a particular note, right? This is where Midnight Sky really pissed me off.
Oh, man. Probably not.
Okay, so I can spoil the end?
Oh, please.
Okay. In the penultimate scene, we find out what we already knew as the audience, that the woman in the spaceship is George Clooney's daughter that he hasn't seen for most of her life. And they make a connection, and I don't even know if she even realizes it or not. And she and the guy on board the ship, they are only two people on this spacecraft. By the way, the Earth is fucked. They have to go back where they came, which, by the way, is habitable, but is not, like, they're only two people, period. In, like, two humans, as far as we know. She's pregnant, though. So there's this touching scene where they talk to each other over the radio. And then, do they end it with the two, like, the father-daughter talking over the radio and, like fade to black, great music, and, like, credits? No. Do they end that conversation and then the captain, who is also the father of the unborn child, and the other girl look at each other saying, well, you know, our love will carry us through and we'll populate this new planetoid or whatever, ignoring a lot about the whole Lot's daughter, you know, kind of situation that's going to happen. No, they don't do that either. No, they do. They kind of do all of those things, not super dramatically. And then with very subtle music, they roll the credits on one side of the screen as the two people in the spaceship, the lady and the guy, are basically doing office work. They're like pushing some buttons, and the one guy turns around and gets something out of the whatever, the like a file cabinet, like putting more toner in the fax machine or whatever. I mean, this is the equivalence. It's like the office is just moving on, and it's like, this is completely unsatisfying. any feelings I had for these people are gone, and I'm just watching them do office work. Not even chit-chatting or talking to each other, just meh. Not excitedly, not frantically. They're the only people in the world, the humans in the universe, as far as I know. Yeah, but nope.
That sounds amazing.
It's problematic, let's say. It just pissed me off as an ending, so. Yeah. This movie had an ending. You may have not liked it, necessarily. Again, Hector doesn't come... You're right, he doesn't win the Humanitarian of the Year award, so basically this girl gets the shaft during the entire thing. All she did was try to stop and help some guy who crashed his car.
Yeah, Hector terrorized her, sexually assaulted her, and then murdered her.
Yeah.
He's not a great dude.
No.
But it's cool you try to defend him at the beginning of this podcast.
Well, okay. I don't want to quibble about sexual assault or whatever, but it's not like he raped her. He did, like, yeah, he definitely assaulted her and made her get naked. So that's bad. He's not a good guy.
Yeah, very bad.
Yeah.
We can all stipulate that. Yes. Very, very bad.
Yes, we will stipulate to that for sure. And poor Clara, you're hoping she never finds out the truth. She went shopping, she came home, her husband is all messed up, but he wasn't all that cute to begin with, so they've been married a while.
Yeah. Yeah, what does it matter at that point?
Well, I do like the fact that they didn't, the husband and wife sex was not explicit, let's say. I'm happy about that. They cut away for that part of it. Because nobody needs that. I mean, I guess I don't want to yuck in these yums, but whatever. Okay.
It was perfectly tasteful.
Yeah. Yeah. I would give it maybe, if I was Jason, I'd probably give it like C+, B-. Fun, good time. Not too much heavy lifting.
I think this movie had a goal, and it accomplished that goal.
Yes.
So I'd give it a higher grade than that. I mean, it had limited resources, and it used them very well.
Yeah, agreed. So was it worth it?
Yeah, this movie is 90 minutes, a fun premise, very well done. This movie is definitely worth it.
Sweet.
Especially if you like time travel movies.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep. There's one other piece of trivia that attention to detail. So when Hector first goes in the house, he passes a computer screen. This is where the nerdy stuff comes in, because if you freeze frame or whatever, the top of the screen is labeled Time Machine Configuration Interface Beta. And the bottom has a warning saying, caution, please pay for your software. Which kind of implies that they were actually running off an unlicensed beta version of the software anyway.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, I like that. That's cool. And the set looks nice. The silo looked great.
It was acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fine. Again, it's, bizarre. Weird, but oh well. So, what do you think about Time Crimes 2 and 3?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish there was such a thing, but no. No. I think Nacho actually has some sort of... Midnight Madness TV series about movies.
Oh.
So, I'm curious where to see that. I think it's all Spanish language. But, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So, hey, kudos to Nacho.
Yeah. Next week, Time Bandits.
Exactly. Yes. Sure. Actually, I don't... imagine that movie holds up?
I don't remember much about that movie, except that we used to watch it a lot.
I was available on cable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Terry Gilliam movie, so it's weird. I think it's got... Maybe I'm confusing it with Under the Rainbow. Does it have a bunch of little people in it?
Pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway. Okay. So, Time Crimes.
Speaking of Terry Gilliam, yes. This movie did remind me of, he did 12 Monkeys, right?
I believe so, yes.
So, the TV show 12 Monkeys, I watched the first season, and it was solid. It was better than I expected it to be. It was a TV show that appeared on Sci-Fi, the Sci-Fi network.
Always a gamble.
Yeah, back when Sci-Fi was pretty much mostly known for Sharknado, right?
Might still be.
Yeah. Does it still exist? Sci-Fi network? I don't know.
I think it does. Yeah, it's the bad CGI blood network.
Yeah. So the TV show was surprisingly good for what my expectations were of it. It had an episode towards the end of season one that was very reminiscent of this movie. It was like a closed loop episode, which was unusual because the whole premise of 12 Monkeys is sort of this open-ended jump back and forth in time story.
Yeah.
So sort of linear on, but at different intervals in the time stream. But then there's one episode which, the whole season is sort of a bit of a mystery. And then there's one episode that answers a bunch of the lingering questions in one kind of loopy story, which was, at the time for me, pretty surprising what they were doing. And it was great. I loved it. It was a very enjoyable 45 minutes of television. This movie reminded me of that.
Excellent. Yeah.
It still wasn't good enough to get me to watch more than like two episodes of the second season.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem. Man, series to me are really daunting these days. Also, I got to figure out how to limit, either get rid of Dish Network altogether or pare down my streaming options, because I can't really do both sustainably. And we hardly ever watch the Dish Network stuff. Except that it is super convenient and allows me to do stuff like watch football and Food Network and just have the TV on, in the background without thinking too much about it. Now, maybe the streaming options will have things that allow you to do that too, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you can get like Hulu with live TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. Anyway. So, housekeeping?
I have a couple things. What was I gonna? I lost it. I just had something, and it's. Did you watch A Star Is Born? That's what I want to know.
I did not. No. I love that you guys were talking about it. No real interest in watching it.
Really?
Yeah.
Even after hearing us talk about it?
No, because I'm not. That's not my kind of movie. I don't want my tears jerked. I mean, maybe I will be in a mood at some point. And I'm sure all the acting is great. I mean, it sounded great.
It was good. I recommend it.
Okay.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a